You're listening to episode 16 of IDRA Class Notes.
There are many ways to draw a picture, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, yes. Kids don't start at the same place to draw a house as they're, you know, when they're learning to draw houses and flowers and stuff. They all do it differently. They arrive at a very, you know, their own version of what a flower looks like or a house looks like. Mathematics is creative. It's creative in that also. So, you know, having these different strategies and tools to create the picture of a solution is what we need to value in kids.
Welcome to IDRA's Class Notes podcast. I'm Aurelio Montemayor. If you're a regular listener, thank you for coming back. If you're a first-time listener, this is a podcast for people who care about every child, making sure that each child has an excellent education. The Intercultural Development Research Association, IDRA, is deeply committed to making schools work for all children. And to do that, we value what the language and the culture that those children and families bring. During the course of this podcast, if you hear something that strikes you or that brings up a question, we would love to hear your thoughts. There will be details at the end of this podcast for where you can send an email or fill out our comment form online. We have a short survey posted online to learn a little bit more about what you think about this podcast and this series. If you do want to help us serve you better by answering the survey, you can hop over to our website and complete it. It won't take long because we value your time. And there's a little added benefit. We're going to be drawing for an Amazon gift certificate. We'll be running this survey for a few more weeks, so answer it if you have the time. Today, we're going to be continuing a conversation we started at another podcast on mathematics. Kathy Brown was talking about the learning of math, the teaching of math, and one of the things that is central to the work that IDRA is doing with her leadership is something called the five dimensions of mathematical proficiency. As we told you before, Catherine is IDRA's technology coordinator and math specialist. She has a Bachelor of Science degree in mathematics, and she's served in the education field for more than 15 years. She was a high school math and computer instructor, received a Teacher of the Year award. She's also served as a member of the State Algebra 1 textbook review panel. Here with us at IDRA, Kathy created MathSmart, a process in teacher development that focuses on increasing access to mathematics for all students. So, Kathy, you've told us already, and we certainly always carry on a conversation about the teaching of math, the learning of math, opening it up to all students. And within that, you talked about the five dimensions of mathematical proficiency. What are those?
Well, it's a lot of work that was done by the National Research Council, and they looked over years and years and tons of research and practice that we already know in mathematics. How do kids learn? And what they came up with, what the council came up with, were the five dimensions of mathematical proficiency. You know, what does it mean to be proficient, first of all? Kind of hold that at bay in your mind. What does it mean for you to be proficient in your work? In a skill that you have? Does it mean that you barely can get by, you can do it okay, you know? Like, I can sew, but can I make a shirt or something that looks like something that's wearable, you know? So if I'm proficient in something, I'm very good at it. It's very, it's innate, it's part of you. So as we think of proficiency, there are these strands, there are five strands, which are the five dimensions of mathematical proficiency. One of them is, and these are by no means in any order, no levels, they're not one takes precedence over the other. They are, in fact, think of a band playing music, they're all in.
So these five dimensions are present simultaneously somehow. Okay.
Yes. So one of them is conceptual understanding. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what does that mean? Well, you understand the concept, basically. You can comprehend the mathematics. You have the big idea, the big picture. For example, fractions. Okay, what do we think of when we think of fractions? Do we connect that fraction as a ratio? of one comparison of one thing to another? Do we connect that to proportionality? Okay, now we use these ratios when we talk about proportions. Do we even connect that to algebraic thinking? You know, back when in elementary school, when we're talking about fractions in kindergarten, how that concept carries its way all the way through, let's say, AP calculus. And so being able to connect one big idea to another big idea. If I'm thinking about linear functions, can I connect that to, oh, well, distance equals rate times time? That's a linear function. That would be an example of.
So that has very little to do with having memorized two steps or three steps in your head of how to do a subtraction or an addition or something like
that. Right. It's the big picture of
it
all.
Picture.
You know, can you see the relationship in Algebra 1 when you're learning linear functions? How does that play a role when you move over to quadratic functions? When we look at the slope of a curve, let's say you're looking at the slope of a quadratic function, you're looking at the slope of the curve, you know, can you compare the linear function to the quadratic function?
So if I was a math teacher, an algebra teacher, let's say ninth graders in high school, and I'm checking a test for right and wrong answers, can I tell from that whether they have conceptual understanding?
A lot depends on the questions that you ask.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
No, these are just formulas, and I'm looking. They're all algebraic formulas, and I find out whether they have the correct answer at the end.
There's some insight that you can gain.
Uh-huh.
But if it's, these are the steps, and here is the solution, and x equals 5, and I don't put any meaning to what the x equals 5 to, you know, the big picture of it, then you might get glimpses of it. But again, it depends on the questions that you ask as a teacher. You have to know the question to ask that will tap into, does the student understand it?
I was just going back to my freshman algebra class, which is before you were born. I remember we had page after page of formulas, and all the teacher would do is check the right or the wrong answer at the end. And they really didn't know whether I had the concept correct in my head or not, where I understood it, not from that test.
And what did the formulas mean? Was it area? Were you looking at the area of a circle? Were you looking at the volume?
I don't know.
You know, and then if you understood how those parameters make up that formula, you know, how they relate to each other, the volume, the base, the height. If you understood that and there was a question on your test referring to that, then I could see if you had the conceptual understanding between something that's two-dimensional going to three dimensions.
Yeah. You know, but I didn't get kind of questions like that. It was just like page after page of...
Me either. Don't worry, me either.
Okay, so that's basically conceptual understanding. So what's another dimension?
Yeah, procedural fluency. What we, you know, I hate to refer to it as this, but what sometimes in mathematics we look at as doing the math. When I think of doing the math, I think of all five dimensions being involved. But sometimes when we think of doing math, it means literally just doing the computation. So knowing how to solve an equation, those steps that are involved, having the procedural fluency. Think of when you're fluent in English or you're fluent in Spanish. You're fluent in it. You don't have to stop and think, okay, how do I translate?
Yeah. You just do it.
You just do it.
Yeah.
It's natural. It's like the back of your hand. So having the procedural fluency where kids don't have to stop and think, how do I divide fractions again? What was the rule? Flip and something, and do I cross multiply here? Oh, no, that's with proportions. You know, that they have the fluency in the procedures.
Now, this part seems to be what I remember the most of my high school math classes. This is what was stressed the most. Just, did you memorize the right formula? Can you use it, to give you the right answer?
Yes, I remember having pages of notes and making sure I knew all the procedures.
Mm-hmm.
And that was math. That was my math class. Another strand is strategic competence. Can you represent? Can you represent a problem? Do you have different strategies you can use? For example, you know, some students work better in finding a solution in making a table of values and seeing the pattern that evolves there to find a solution. That's one strategy. Someone else might input data into a graphing calculator, do a regression. You know, that's another. Having a whole handful of your eyes popped out. Guess you haven't used a graphing calculator. But but having tools available to them, whether tools as far as technology or tools that are strategies that they use, you know, being able to pull and even use them in conjunction with one another. You know.
That's interesting because I didn't think that math teachers would worry about having a broad array of strategies or ways to solve a problem. I would think just you solve it in one way, or you memorize this formula, and there's only one correct way to do this. You know what this reminds me of is, for example, when kids come from another country and they have a certain way to do a long division, and then you have the short division or something like that, and if you don't use the strategy the teacher wants, you got it wrong, because there's only one way. And obviously there's many different strategies you can use to do a mathematical thing, right?
There are many ways to draw a picture, right? I mean, kids don't start at the same place to draw a house as they're, you know, when they're learning to draw houses and, and flowers and stuff. They all do it differently. They arrive at a very, you know, their own version of what a flower looks like or a house looks like. Mathematics is creative. It's creative in that also. So, you know, having these different strategies and tools to create the picture of a solution is what we need to value in kids. Another one is adaptive reasoning. And so one thing that we leave out in the mathematics classroom is discussion or reflective thought. Think of yourself as a teacher. How many times in the day do you reflect on, is this working? Did it work? What can I do to improve for tomorrow? It worked third period. What do I need to modify for fifth period? That kind of reflective thought is something that's part of our practice. But it also should be a part of the learning experience for a math student. You know, you're in class and justifying your solutions, discussing. We work a lot with English language learners, and yet we don't provide a lot of opportunities for them to practice the academic language, use the academic language to justify their thinking, and have this kind of reflective thought, whether it's written, it should be written, it should be spoken, it should be shown visually. Different ways you can look at adaptive reasoning.
You know, a colleague of ours used to tell me, and it was the first time I come from a background of having been an English teacher. So the teaching of math, even though I did math well when I was in school, it was not very creative, and I've always thought language arts is creative. Mm-hmm. Math is just simple, and you don't really care the talk that kids do. Like in speech class or in literature class, I want to hear them talk about the reaction to a poem. Why would a math teacher be interested in how kids are talking about how they see a problem or stuff like that? Why is that important in math?
Well, I come from the other end. I was a math major with an English minor. Why would they? Because one, it's the reasoning that takes place. It's the beauty in the reasoning. Not so much the solution, like the reasoning in, well, why did you think Hamlet, why do you think he's a coward or not? What was it about this? And what is your justification for that?
Sure, and that's true for analyzing a play.
That's right.
But so, then for a quadratic equation?
Well, here's a problem situation. Why do you think that that is the best strategy to go about it? Because this is our environment, this is what's happening. So, you know, they're building a highway outside, which they are right now.
Yeah.
They're building highways everywhere. So what data is important? Okay, if we're going to solve this problem, what data do you need? What information do you need? How are we going to get that information? We can go on the internet. We can collect data. We can do experiments. We can.
So also, you call this adaptive reasoning. It's about student talk, but it's also about looking at what's around you and using your context to see the mathematical implications of it or something like that?
Well, it's looking at logical thought and building your capacity for logical thought.
Okay.
And so having opportunities to build that. I mean, how many times do we let students just sit and think about this? Think it through. What information do you know? What do you need to know? What can we find? Where can we find it? How can we structure, you know, put a framework around it to make some sense of it?
You know, that's interesting because in a few years ago in one of our newsletter articles, your colleague and mine, Jack, had given an example of a math lesson. This was with ELL learners. And they were trying to find to reason to a certain law in mathematics, which is the addition of all the angles of a quadratic, a four-sided figure would always equal the same number, or would it, you know? And so they tore up these four-sided figures and then tried to line up all the angles. And, and one child said, it forms a straight line. Another said, no, it forms half a circle. And then they tore them up and put all the angles together. But what he recorded and what we have in the article is all the different things, reasonings they come. One said, it's a straight line. Mm-hmm. They will always form a straight line. And the other one said, no, it's half a circle. Uh-huh. It was looking right. at it in a different way. Mm-hmm. It's 180 degrees. She didn't say that, but it was they were getting at. And it was really interesting. They were revealing their thinking mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. that and seeing that several answers were correct, mm-hmm. but coming at it from a different way of seeing it.
And mathematics becomes a conversation versus here's the information, take the notes, you do it this way. And even in our best thinking is, you know, giving kids, letting it be free enough that it's not prescribed. Because sometimes we can give activities that look like they're mm-hmm. open-ended, but here's the steps on how to do it. Sometimes we do that with technology. You know, here's your Grafman calculator. You're going to put the data here. You're going to do this. You're going to step by step by step, instead of letting it have the open-endedness of the freedom of that thought and expression. So having that conversation. The fifth dimension is productive disposition. So this is the Barry White of them all. You know, Barry White's voice, you can hear it in the singing, you know, in any of the songs, you can't imagine that song without his voice.
Right.
And sometimes we look at the four dimensions that we were talking about. The fifth dimension cannot be left out, and that's very important, and that's having a productive disposition. Now, you see the value of the mathematics you as a learner are learning now, in my life now. And I feel good about learning the mathematics. I don't feel like, well, she's a good student in math, and I'm not. I feel like, yes, I can do this. I see mathematics as something I can do.
Okay. So, let's say I'm a traditional math teacher. Mm-hmm. How does this change how I see teaching?
Well, we have to think of what are our expectations of all kids. Traditionally, we've seen mathematics as for the few, the mm-hmm. elite, those that can and can't.
Certainly when you think of Algebra 2 or trigonometry or pre-cal and mm-hmm. calculus.
Think of how many kids are enrolled in those classes right now in your campus, in your school, in your district. Okay, and so if we're talking about mathematical proficiency, then we're talking about large numbers throughout that span of the classes. And so we want kids to graduate mathematically proficiency as we expect them to graduate knowing how to read. You know, mm-hmm. if we like, oh, he graduated and he couldn't read.
What?
It's a horror.
Yeah.
But if we say, oh, well, he couldn't do algebra. That's okay. I couldn't do it either. I don't even use it every day. You know, if we keep accepting those statements. So as a math teacher or as a teacher or a parent or someone in the community, I need to make sure that I provide those comments that say, hey, you can do it. I use it this way. Math for everyone. Draw a sign.
Okay. So if you're interested in more information, thank you, Kathy, visit our website, idra.org. There are links in our notes for the IDRA website. And we have quite a few articles offering the professional development approach called Math Smart that Kathy is heading. Please give us your feedback. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to IDRA Class Notes. For more information on IDRA and other Class Notes topics, go to www.idra.org. You can also send us your thoughts by email to podcast@idra.org or fill out the form on our podcast webpage at www.idra.org/podcasts.